The Baxter Building, home of the Fantastic Four, had seen its share of battles. The Sinister Six once tore up the square in front so badly, the FF had been without water for a week. Galactus, Devourer of Worlds, had been fought off from the roof. Dr. Doom once launched the entire building into space. The people of Midtown Manhattan, understandably, had a love-hate relationship with the Fantastic Four. They loved having heroes in their midst, especially heroes as public and friendly as the Four, but the constant brawling and property damage had brought on civil suits, protests, and even the occasional death threat. Still, Spider-Man had never seen anything like the scene outside today. A solid wall of protesters formed a semicircle in front of the Baxter Building, blocking Broadway where it met 7th Avenue at the north end of Times Square. The crowd waved signs reading, FF out of NYC, New Warriors of Death, Registration Now, Heroes equals Murderers, and perhaps most succinctly, Remember Stamford.
Who's that?
Great. Doesn't anybody recognize me in the new threads?
Spider-Man swung over the crowd as swiftly as he could manage. A rock flew past his head, then a tomato. He let go of his web line and spread his arms wide. He felt a moment of panic. He'd only used the costume's gliding mechanism once before, and he really didn't want to plummet face first into that angry mob. But at a certain point, he reflected, he had to trust something, or someone. Tony Stark, in this case. Then Spider-Man was soaring, almost flying through the air. He reached out and made contact with the outer wall of the Baxter Building, then scuttled upward like his namesake, circling around the building to avoid the huge vehicle hangar doors on the top levels. At the second level from the top, he spotted a concealed doorway built right into the brick facing. He started to reach for it.
До свидания.
Natasha Romanoff, the Russian super spy called the Black Widow, sat casually on a ledge, gorgeous as always in tight black leather.
Natasha, what? How did you get here?
You have airplanes in this country.
Well, what are you doing?
Waiting for you. Well, someone like you, preferably taller.
She stretched, standing precariously on the ledge. The street was 40 stories below. Natasha didn't seem concerned.
I just flew in from the mother country. Tony was kind enough to tell me about the gathering, but apparently Reed Richards didn't get the message. I was not on the approved list at the door.
She gestured down at the crowd, now distant dots of color.
And security is a bit tight today.
So you just...
There was bound to be an airborne visitor sooner or later.
Huh.
Spidey digested this for a moment. Then he shrugged and turned back to the hidden doorway.
Johnny Storm gave me access to this. Man, I hope he's okay.
Yes, yes.
At Spider-Man's touch, the doorway glowed. The word authenticating appeared, holographically superimposed over the bricks, then authorized. The hatch swung inward. After a quick crawl through an air duct, they dropped down into a corridor near the FF's main operational center.
So, are you here as an Avenger, or... representing S.H.I.E.L.D.?
The Widow shrugged, as if the question had no meaning. A tiny girl raced into sight, followed by a slightly older boy with a thick mop of blonde hair who was chasing after her. They both stopped, eyeing the Widow. She glared back down at them. Then the boy turned to Spider-Man.
Hey, Uncle Spidey! Cool costume!
Thank you, Franklin. You're the first person I've met today with any taste.
The girl, Valeria, had recovered and looked at them with witchy, glowing eyes.
Everybody's in Daddy's lab.
Cool.
Spidey reached down and ruffled her hair. Valeria stood stock still, watching him, as though they were conducting an experiment together. Then Franklin slapped her arm.
Ow! You!
Valeria whirled and took off after her brother. Franklin and Valeria were great kids, and Peter knew how much they meant to Reed and Sue. He felt a twinge of regret, of envy. If only things had worked out differently for him.
While we're young?
Right.
He followed the Widow down the hall. He always felt like a 12-year-old around her. Reed Richards' laboratory was huge, windowless, high-ceilinged, and utterly packed with scientific equipment. Particle beam microscopes, giant lasers, alien spaceships laid out like frogs ready to be dissected, supercomputers ranging from the latest sun systems to antique Cray assemblages, all custom networked together in a tangled system that only Reed's incredible brain could understand. Johnny Storm had once observed to Spidey that if anything ever happened to Reed, Nobody ever again would even be able to toast a slice of bread in this lab. It seemed an odd place for the biggest gathering of superheroes ever assembled, but Spider-Man quickly realized that it was the only room in the Baxter building large enough. Hawkeye, Goliath, the Falcon, Tigra, and Ms. Marvel stood together, talking intensely. These, Peter realized, were the core Avengers, the nexus of Tony's premier superhero team. Hawkeye gestured wildly, nearly banging into one of Reed's big electronic devices, a time machine maybe. Luke Cage stood apart in street clothes and dark shades, speaking in low tones with Cloak, a young African-American hero in a swirling blue costume. Nighthawk and Valkyrie, representatives of the off-and-on team The Defenders, milled about uncomfortably, drinks in their hands. Spider-Woman, the red and yellow-clad masked Avenger, stood alone in the group, tapping at her phone. The young Avengers, Hulkling, Patriot, Wiccan, Stature, and Speed, seemed to huddle together, eyeing the older heroes suspiciously. Dagger, a willowy young girl with light powers, danced around the room, flitting excitedly from one of Reed's machines to the next. Reed stood in the back, near the negative zone portal, his neck stretched out like a 10-foot snake. His head bobbed back and forth, following Dagger's path. Every time she touched something, he winced. Spider-Man felt a stab of claustrophobia. Here, among all his fellow heroes, he felt somehow, paradoxically, exposed, vulnerable. He had to remind himself he wasn't wanted by the law anymore. He was an Avenger now. He spotted Daredevil over in a corner, talking with the green-skinned She-Hulk.
Constitutionally, it's a minefield.
Get two lawyers together, Spider-Man thought. He started over toward Daredevil, but Natasha elbowed past him.
Darling, there you are.
She slinked up to Daredevil and laid a hand on his chest.
I guess we'll talk later.
She-Hulk rolled her eyes and turned away.
Spidey, glad you came.
Ben Grimm, the Thing, clapped a hand on Spider-Man's back. Not too hard. Ben had learned how to temper his friendly gestures in order not to cripple people.
Ben!
Spidey leaned against an intricate machine, a latticework of glass and metal.
You better not touch that.
Oh, sorry. Reed'll get mad?
Worse. He'll spend 20 minutes telling you what it does.
Oh, hey, how's Johnny doing?
Better. He's stable, mostly conscious. Susie's with him now. I shouldn't think about it too much.
He slammed a rocky fist into his palm.
Makes me want to clobber somebody.
Yeah. Any news about the Registration Act yet?
Not yet.
The sound was muted, but a graphic read, "Breaking news. Senate in closed session on SRA.
Should be any minute."
Ms. Marvel glided over to join them, tall and statuesque in blue and red. The other Avengers followed in her wake.
Tony's been incommunicado all day. We were just wondering if you've heard from him.
Tigra smiled, baring pointed teeth.
Spider-Man is Tony's new favorite.
Not me. Haven't heard a word.
He felt uncomfortable again, like an intruder in a private club. Hawkeye the Archer looked up from his phone.
Tone only texts me about babes, and I ain't got a single pic from him today. That really worries me.
Hey, where's Captain America?
Falcon shrugged.
Called away? Top secret. That's all he'd say.
Gotta be S.H.I.E.L.D. It's always S.H.I.E.L.D.
Nighthawk was staring at the TV screen.
Pension plans and annual vacation time? Are they trying to turn us into civil servants?
Luke Cage frowned.
I think they're trying to close us down.
Or make us more legitimate. Why shouldn't we be better trained and publicly accountable?
Patriot, leader of the Young Avengers, spoke up.
Somebody said we should go on strike if they mess with us. Does anybody think that's a good idea?
Reed Richards stepped forward, frowning.
I don't think anyone here would seriously advocate a superhero strike, son.
Becoming public employees makes perfect sense if it helps people sleep easier.
I can't believe I'm hearing this.
Goliath grew slightly, rising to 8 feet in height, and all eyes turned to him.
The masks are tradition. They're part of who we are. Now, we can't just let the government turn us into super cops.
Spider-Woman folded her arms.
Actually, we're lucky people have put up with this for as long as they have. Why should we be allowed to hide behind these masks?
Because the world ain't so nice outside your ivory tower, babe.
I've never really understood the secret identity fetish. The Fantastic Four have been public since the very beginning, and it's always worked for us.
For you, maybe. But what about the day I come home and find the woman who raised me impaled on an octopus arm?
There was awkward silence after that. Peter had to admit, he sure knew how to bring down a room. As the conversation slowly resumed, he slinked into a corner. Behind a refrigerator-sized electron microscope, Daredevil and the Black Widow stood very close together, their lips almost touching. At first, Spidey couldn't tell if they were arguing or making out.
Stop being paranoid. It's all just speculation at the moment.
No, this has been building for a long time. Stanford was just the final straw.
You Americans, so spoiled with freedom. The slightest hint of a threat and you throw a tantrum.
If that act passes, it's the end of the way we do business. The end of everything. And smell it in the air.
As I said, spoiled.
Quiet, everyone!
Spidey turned to see Reed Richards raising a remote control toward the screen. All eyes turned to stare up. The blank visage of Iron Man stared down at them.
After this report, an exclusive interview with Anthony Stark, the invincible Iron Man.
Peter Parker hoped that Tony knew what he was doing. Once, the world had been simple. Countries fought wars over lines on a map, occupying conquered territories with tanks, armies, and fleets. Men battled on land, at sea, or in fighter planes. They fought, they fell, and they died. Except for Captain America. In 1945, near the end of the Second World War, he fell in battle, but he didn't die. Through a fluke of nature, he was preserved in a state of suspension, fated to awaken decades later. In a very different world. A world of global communications, satellite tracking, of cameras and computers smaller than a speck of dust. A world where wars were fought very differently, for different causes, with startling new technologies. Technologies such as the Shield Helicarrier. Built during the Cold War, the Helicarrier served as command post and staging point for all major operations of the Strategic Hazard Intervention Espionage Logistics Directorate. The size and bulk of a small city, it soared above the Earth, powered by several breakthrough technologies developed by Stark Enterprises. Current location, 6 miles over New York City. On the carrier's flight deck, Captain America watched an F-22 Raptor glide in for a landing. Cap turned to peer down over the edge of the deck's metal balcony, wind whipping at his face. Somewhere down below, Earth superheroes were gathering. But he couldn't see the city. Too much cloud cover. Captain America's duties had brought him to the Helicarrier many times before. But this time, something was different.
Cap, the director will see you now.
Armored SHIELD agents escorted Cap through high, gray metal corridors dotted with window portals. The corridor opened up into a wide, low-ceilinged room crisscrossed with walkways. No more windows. A proud woman stood facing him in full SHIELD braid, with short-cropped hair and striking features. Two male agents flanked her, their hands held loose near high-tech sidearms. One had cruel eyes and broken-looking features. The other wore shades and sported a mustache.
Captain.
Commander Hill.
It's director now. Well, acting director.
Where's Fury?
You've been out of the loop, haven't you?
She stepped closer to him.
I'm sorry to report that Nicholas Fury was lost at sea 4 months ago. You've heard of the Poseidon Protocol?
Only the name.
And that's all you're ever going to hear. Suffice it to say, Nick Fury gave his life for his country.
There was a sick feeling in Cap's stomach. He'd lost comrades before, but this was a shock, especially so soon after Thor's death. Like Cap, Fury was just a man, but an extraordinary one. He'd been around at least as long as Cap, fought in even more wars, and had beaten the odds time and again.
A surprising new pain came with the words.
Gave his life for his country.
I'm told that 23 of your friends are meeting in the Baxter Building right now to discuss the super community's reaction to the Superhuman Registration Act. What do you think they should do?
I don't think that's for me to say.
Cut the crap, Captain. I know you were tight with Fury, but I'm acting head of SHIELD now. If nothing else, I expect you to respect the badge.
I think this plan will split us down the middle. I think you're going to have us at war with one another.
What's the matter with these guys?
The cruel-looking agent gestured at Cap.
How can anyone argue against superheroes being properly trained and paid for a living?
Cap turned sharply to Hill, expecting her to keep her man in line, but she just looked to the other agent, the one with the mustache.
How many rebels do you estimate here, Captain?
If registration becomes law, a lot.
Any majors?
Mostly the heroes who work close to the streets. Daredevil, maybe Iron Fist. I can't be sure.
So, nobody you can't handle.
What?
You heard me.
Cap's hand involuntarily clenched into a fist. He slipped it behind his back.
The proposal has just passed the Senate. It's done, Captain. The law will take effect in 2 weeks, which means we're already behind schedule.
She gestured around at the helicarrier.
We're developing an anti-superhuman response unit here, but we need to make sure the Avengers are on board, and that you're out there leading the Avengers.
You're asking me to arrest people who risk their lives for this country every day of the week?
No, Captain, I'm asking you to obey the will of the American people.
More S.H.I.E.L.D. agents had filed in, Cap realized. Heavily armored men and women, in padded riot gear with thick visors. They gathered around Hill and behind Cap as well, surrounding him.
Don't play politics, Hill. Superheroes need to stay above that stuff. We can't have Washington telling us who the supervillains are.
I thought supervillains were guys in masks who refused to obey the law.
Her finger barely twitched, but Cap caught the motion. Instantly, a dozen S.H.I.E.L.D. agents raised their weapons into position. Rifles and lasers and trank guns, all pointed at one man. A man with a flag on his chest. Cap didn't flinch, didn't move a muscle.
Is this the hit squad you've been training to take down heroes?
Nobody wants a war, Captain. The people are just sick and tired of living in the Wild West.
Masked heroes are a part of this country's history.
So smallpox. Grow up, huh?
Nobody's saying you can't do your job. We're just expanding its parameters, that's all.
It's time you went legit like the rest of us, soldier.
Mustache agent held his rifle outstretched, its red laser dot dancing across the star on Cap's chest.
I knew your grandfather, Hill. Did you know that?
Maria Hill just stared at him.
His unit suffered 80% losses in the Bulge. They retreated along the English Channel. Cut off, no supplies. The weather was brutal. Huge storms, blinding snowfalls, sub-zero temperatures. One man bled out, another died stopping a panzer division from crossing the river. Corporal Francis Hill kept his last buddy alive. When we found them, they were half-starved and suffering from severe exposure, but he'd held his bridge against the Germans and saved at least one man's life. Did he ever tell you that story, Director Hill?
A dozen times.
He was one of many true heroes I met in that war.
Their war, not mine.
Put your weapons down, boys.
Captain America is not in command here.
Weapons down, or I will not be responsible for what comes next.
Tranquilizers on. Get ready.
This is insane, Hill.
There's an easy solution.
Damn you for this.
Damn you for making me do this.
Cap rammed his S.H.I.E.L.D. into the agent's rifle just as the man pulled the trigger. Cap leapt upward, pivoted in midair, and grabbed the second man's neck.
Whoa.
Twisting just hard enough to knock him off his feet.
Tranquilizers, now!
Cap grabbed the third agent and lifted him in front of him. The barrage of tranq capsules struck the agent full on. Then Cap flung the agent into his attackers and took off at a run.
Take him! Take him down!
He plowed through the line of agents. Armor had its drawbacks. Cap was lighter and swifter than his enemies. The S.H.I.E.L.D. agent with the cruel feature stood before the corridor leading outside, blocking Cap's way. Four more men backed him up, all armed with heavy-gauge rifles. These weren't trank guns, not anymore. Cap raised his S.H.I.E.L.D.
Don't even think it, little man.
Then he charged, head down, his S.H.I.E.L.D. held straight out like a battering ram. He swung the S.H.I.E.L.D. savagely, toppling S.H.I.E.L.D. agents like tenpins.
Director Hill to all units, stop Captain America. I repeat, stop Captain America.
Cap dashed out into the hallway. He paused before a small window, holding his S.H.I.E.L.D. up behind him to block the fire. He waited, braced against the window, for a break in the fire. Inevitably, it came. Muscles honed in World War II coiled tight, Captain America swiveled around and punched out the window with his S.H.I.E.L.D. Then he leapt out the window and into the open air. The flight deck lay below, but that was no good. He'd be a sitting duck. He bounced off a gun mount and flipped himself upward, heading toward the upper levels of the helicarrier. Grabbing a disused propeller, he swung himself up again. Below, a phalanx of S.H.I.E.L.D. agents appeared in the shattered window.
There he is up there!
This is bad. 6 miles up and nowhere to run.
Then he saw it. An old P-40 Warhawk, just arcing down toward the flight deck. A relic just like him, miraculously still in service. It bore the cruel jaw and painted eye of the Flying Tigers, meticulously repainted over the years. The P-40 must have been closing in for a landing when the shooting broke out. 80, 90 feet above, and dropping. 70, 65, Cap leapt. crashed down on top of the cockpit shield first, shattering the glass.
Jesus!
The pilot flinched away, and Cap clamped a hand onto the man's throat.
Keep flying, son, and watch the profanity.
Yes, sir!
The pilot nodded frantically and pulled up on the stick. The flight deck grew closer, faster and faster, then seemed to flatten out as the plane leveled off, less than 20 feet above the deck. Then, it began to rise. Cap staggered, almost toppled off, but held on, gritting his teeth. Shield agents on the flight deck pointed upward, but Cap's plane was moving too fast, and then they were out over open air. Cap glanced backward. The helicarrier was shrinking into the distance, its jagged bulk loomed against the clouds. No doubt Hill was already scrambling pursuit planes, but he knew they'd be too late. Cap steadied himself atop the cracked cockpit, riding the plane like a surfer. He looked down just as the clouds parted, revealing the spires of Manhattan, the ocean and rivers surrounding it, the sea to the east, the mountains and farms and towns to the west.
Where are we going?
Cap leaned forward into the wind.
America!
The place? Corner of 12th Street and 5th Avenue, Manhattan. The time? 8:24 a.m. Morning rush hour. The giant robot shook the ground with every step, its face a gigantic twisted mirror image of the villain called Dr. Doom. Tony Stark hovered in midair, half a block away from the robot. He looked down, saw that the police had cleared the block. People stood behind barricades, watching, recording the scene with their phones and digital cameras.
This is our chance.
Ms. Marvel glided up next to Tony, waiting for instructions. Tony opened a radio link.
Reed, are you online?
In the absence of conclusive evidence, I would assume that's the Doombot.
We're ready, Tone. Friendly neighborhood rookie Avenger, reporting for duty.
Tony scanned his troops. Tigra nodded fiercely up at him. Cage looked grim. Spider-Man clung to a factory building wall, ready for action. Ms. Marvel hovered, poised and statuesque, as always.
Amplifiers, full gain.
Attention citizens, I am Iron Man, a registered superhuman. Real name, Anthony Stark. This is an initiative approved superhuman procedure, operating within SRA protocols. Please, stand back and allow us to do our jobs. There is nothing to fear.
People in the crowd exchanged uncertain glances.
Reed, quick rundown on this thing, and I mean quick.
It's a prototype peacekeeper built by Dr. Doom. You know who he is?
Yes, Reed.
Victor Von Doom was Reed's arch-foe, a brilliant armored scientist who ruled the country of Latveria with, quite literally, an iron fist. Doom had nurtured a grudge against Reed since their days in college together.
Right. Well, Doom claims he intended the bot only for domestic use within Latveria, but it developed some sort of rudimentary artificial intelligence that fled to America.
Ms. Marvel frowned.
Doom actually warned you about this thing? Why?
Well, maybe he sees which way the political winds are blowing in his country. I suspect he wants to get on Tony's good side, or perhaps he has another deeper plan. I don't know.
Tony realized that those were Reed's least favorite three words in the English language.
Thanks, Reed. Stark out. Everyone, follow my lead. Remember, this is the beginning of a new era. It's our chance to show how things will work from now on, to regain the people's trust.
Me like trust. Trust good.
First stage, aerial assault.
Tony launched himself forward.
Carol, follow me.
Ms. Marvel fell in behind him, her long red sash waving bright in the morning sun. Together, they arrowed toward the robot's head, slicing through the air in perfect formation. It turned glowing eyes toward them as it stepped on a parked car, smashing the trunk flat. A woman wrenched open the driver's side door and half stumbled, half fell out, clutching a baby. Slowly, the robot's head swiveled to look down at her. Ms. Marvel's blue-gloved arms were outstretched, beginning to glow with power. Carol's half-alien physiology allowed her to generate highly charged energy bolts. She was one of the most powerful Avengers in a combat situation. But if she fired at the robot now...
Carol, civilian safety first!
The robot reached a huge arm down toward the frightened woman. She stood frozen, backed up against the car, her fingers rigid around her baby. When she saw Ms. Marvel arcing down, the woman shrank even farther back. She was as terrified of them as of the Doombot.
Protocols!
Miss Marvel seemed to pivot in midair, coming to a stop just above the battered car. The robot looked confused, turning its head toward Ms. Marvel.
I am Ms. Marvel, a registered superhero. Real name, Carol Danvers. I am here to assist you. Please stand back and allow me to...
The robot swatted her out of the air.
Avengers, assemble!
Tony's powerful repulsor rays blasted into the robot's head. Sparks showered into the air. Tony retreated back a few feet and activated a multiple camera protocol. All at once, his internal monitors gave him the whole picture. Ms. Marvel had struck a building, raining bricks down onto the sidewalk. She was clearly dazed, but her pulse rate showed even. No serious injuries. The woman ran off down the street, holding her baby. She was safe. The Doombot's brain casing had cracked open, exposing servos and circuitry, but it was still standing. Tony felt the tingle of a radar lock and saw an unfamiliar weapon tube extruding from the robot's finger. Spider-Man webbed through the air toward the battle. Cage and the Black Widow ran down the street, half a step behind him. The Doombot's weapon let out a bright arc-light flash, blinding Tony momentarily. Eye filters dropped down automatically in less than a second. It took another 3 seconds for his vision to clear, and by then, the robot was still in motion, but the Avengers were on it. Cage had climbed onto its back, pounding at it with steel-hard fists. Widow stood perched on a lamppost, blasting its chest with her stingers. The robot lurched from side to side, almost as if it could feel the pain of their assault. Spider-Man landed light as a feather on the street, just behind the robot. He planted his feet firmly, reached out both arms, and fired off a thick barrage of sticky webbing. It struck the robot's back, elegantly missing Cage, who climbed up toward the robot's head. The robot stopped short, anchored by the pull of the webbing. Cage spotted the robot's shattered brain casing.
Here we go.
He reared back and started pummeling.
Cage, protocols!
But Cage ignored Tony. He reached inside the robot's head and began yanking out wires. Electric flashes sparked harmlessly off his tough skin. Tony moved in, repulsors glowing.
Hold it steady, Spider-Man.
You got it, boss.
Stop calling me that.
Right, boss.
The webbing was a thick cable now, stretching from Spider-Man's wrists to the struggling Doombot. With practiced ease, Spidey twirled his hands and grabbed hold of the webbing. Then, he pulled. The Doombot raised a leg, tried to move forward. Spider-Man held him firm, his lean muscles straining. Inside his armor, Tony smiled with pride. These were the new Avengers. His Avengers.
Keep it up, Spider-Man. Nice job.
Thanks. Hey, Tone, when this is over, I need to talk to you about a few things.
I don't have a hole in my schedule till next spring. Let's do it now.
Still gripping the web line, Spider-Man turned gold metallic eyes upward in surprise.
Now?
Tony switched to a private frequency.
It's called multitasking.
Whoa. It's like you're inside my head.
Then Ms. Marvel swooped up again in front of the bot. She fired off twin energy blasts from her hands, and the Doombot's head caved in.
Tick-tock, Peter.
Right. Well, first off, I got your first stipend check, and...
Make sure they took out the FICA. FICA will really come back and bite you.
Tony, it was more than I made last year.
Tony blasted the robot.
You're earning it, Peter. Right now.
Well, you know, thanks.
The robot doubled forward, falling to its knees.
Peter, listen to me. The Superhuman Registration Act becomes law at midnight tonight. I personally assured the president that I will take charge of its implementation.
You?
Someone has to do it. Nobody wants some faceless administration bureaucrat in the job. Better that it's someone who understands the powered community, who's registered and operating publicly himself.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I'm gonna need you at my side.
For that stipend? You got it.
It's not a simple matter, Peter.
Tony flipped channels momentarily.
Natasha, sever that thing's head, will ya?
From her perch atop a lamppost, the Black Widow smiled. Her stingers flashed out, and the Doombot's head tumbled free, but its body kept moving, lurching around randomly, dangerously close to the fenced-in spectators.
Peter, I'll need your help in some matters of enforcement. Details will be forthcoming.
Okay, I guess.
And there's something else. You know what I'm talking about.
Tony,
Peter, it's the right thing to do. And as of midnight, it's the law.
Spider-Man's expression was unreadable beneath his mask, but Tony's readouts showed elevated levels of adrenaline within him and an accelerated pulse rate.
Just lay down and die, giant metal mother!
Cage grappled with the Doombot's leg, kneecapping it repeatedly with one powerful punch after another.
This boy takes some punishment. It's not open for negotiation, Peter.
I need you to promise me something.
Name it.
My aunt. Aunt May? No matter what happens, you have to keep her safe.
Peter, I swear to you right now, if you do this, I'll safeguard that sweet old lady's life with my own.
Just a sec.
Drawing on every ounce of his enhanced strength, Spider-Man yanked hard on the web line. Cage and the Widow leapt clear as Ms. Marvel wafted upward, all grace and power. The Doombot crashed to the pavement in a shower of sparks and lay still. Tony looked down, surveying the scene. The Doombot lay in a sprawl of cracked tar, smack in the middle of the street. The Avengers stood in a circle around it, dusting themselves off. Tony made a thumbs-up gesture, and the police started lowering the barricades. People crept in cautiously toward the middle of the street. They stared at the robot for a long moment. Tony reached out and took Ms. Marvel's hand. Together, like royalty, they descended to the street.
Hear that? That's the sound of people starting to believe in heroes again!
I ain't sure. We still gonna be superheroes after this, Tony? Won't we just be S.H.I.E.L.D. agents on the federal payroll?
No, Luke. We're heroes. We tackle supercrime and we save people's lives. The only thing changing is that the kids, the amateurs, and the sociopaths will be weeded out.
Which category does Captain America fall into, Anthony?
Tony rose up slightly, twirled around. He raised powerful arms to the crowd.
Trust me, Natasha. Cap's wrong this time.
Susan Richards was tired. Tired of hospital food, of hospital coffee. Tired of chatting with her groggy brother, trying to keep his spirits up. Tired of prying information out of the doctors about how well the operation had gone. Of trying to explain to the nurses that they needed to keep Johnny's fever down at all times, unless they wanted to walk in one morning and find the sheets accidentally charred to ashes. Mostly, she was just tired.
Franklin?
She kicked off her shoes, flipped on the living room light.
Val, honey?
She pulled out her phone. A light was blinking.
Susie, Franklin wanted to see the new Pixar flick, so I took the Rugrats out. Figured you and Big Brain could use a little alone time.
And a second message.
Okay, I'm the one who wanted to see the Pixar flick. Val was pushing for a documentary, but I'm still bigger than her.
At times like this, Sue realized what a blessing the Fantastic Four was. They weren't just a team like the Avengers or the Defenders. They were a mutual support group, a family, a comfort when times got rough. Sue checked the mail, flipped on the TV.
Greeting family members of the victims of the Stamford tragedy.
More footage of the Stamford explosion, rising up in a thick black cloud.
Are they ever going to stop showing that?
Almost ritualistically, Sue paced through the dining room, kitchen, all three bathrooms. Franklin's little room, and Val's littler one. The master bedroom was dark, empty. The bed undisturbed where the robot maid had neatened it this morning.
Okay, Sue. Quit stalling. You know where he is.
Reed's lab was buzzing, both figuratively and literally. Over the past week, he'd rented a dozen extra high-powered computer systems from Columbia University, airlifting them in and networking them into his existing databases. The floor was a spaghetti tangle of cables, server boxes, routers, and switches. And in the center, a hexagonal table strewn with laptop computers, papers, and tablets. Reed sat at the far end, his elongated neck craned up and around, eyes flicking from a tablet computer to a sheaf of hologram-stamped papers marked classified. She knew how Reed got when he was deep into his research. In order to get his attention, she'd have to say at least four separate outrageous things, waiting after each one for him to grunt. Sometimes punching was required. To her shock, he looked right up and smiled at her.
Susan, you wouldn't believe what happened this morning.
I guess it wasn't opening the electric bill.
I alerted the Avengers to a Doombot, helped them stop its rampage, and afterward, Tony came by and we talked for a long time. Oh, he's got a lot of plans, honey. A lot of very important plans. Oh, this is the biggest thing I've ever worked on. Tony wasn't kidding when he said he'd revolutionize every metahuman in America. I haven't been this excited since I saw my first singularity.
I'd be excited too if Tony's genius plan didn't mean jail for half our Christmas list.
Yes, yes, I know.
He turned away and activated a large wall screen.
But it's their choice. They can always register.
About this registration.
Oh, it's a must, honey. Here, take a look at my projections.
Frowning, Sue crossed to the wall screen. Reed's handwriting covered it, floor to ceiling. Equations, notes, circles, strikeouts.
This is gobbledygook.
No!
He stretched up behind her, pointed to the screen.
No. It's the exponential curve the number of super beings is following. We're seeing more every year. Mutants, accidents, artificially powered humans like Tony, aliens, even time travelers. It's an enormous social danger.
But they're all people.
We're facing an apocalypse if the unregulated activity isn't brought under control.
She felt his hand, soft, on her shoulder blade.
This isn't politics, darling, it's science. I'd reached this conclusion already. Tony's plan is just the best, quickest way to prevent disaster.
Sue said nothing.
You should have seen the team in action this morning. Tony showed me the video. They did their job perfectly, and they did it all within the new guidelines. This can work, darling. Plus, it's an amazing opportunity for us.
Reed's fingers caressed the small of her back now. Slowly, his hand crept downward. Sue and Reed had always had an active sex life, even after the kids were born. More than once, she'd laughed to herself about the image their friends had of them. Everyone saw Reed as a cold, obsessive scientist, and her as a cheery mother figure. They had no idea. But this, something was deeply, profoundly wrong. Involuntarily, she flashed on her force field. Reed snatched his fingers away as though he'd been stung.
Sorry.
Sue whirled toward the negative zone portal. Its lights flashed, its circular perimeter whirled to life. Within the portal, a swirling mass of stars appeared, dotted with asteroids and distant, fast-moving humanoid forms.
It's all right, just running a test.
Project 42 Gateway, drill successful.
Project 42? What's that?
It's
classified.
The red and gold figure of Iron Man had emerged from the portal.
Hello, Susan.
Tony?
So, how are conditions inside?
Interesting. I think it'll do.
I'll collate the data on the...
We'll discuss it later. I have to get going.
Tony looked up, as if distracted by some signal coming through his armor.
Remember, the SRA becomes law at midnight. Your paperwork's done, right?
We're already public. Our identities are known.
Well, nonetheless, there are forms. We need your power levels, known weaknesses, any prison record or incidents where a member of your team has lost control, that sort of thing.
Of course. I also want to talk to Dr. Pym about that Niflhel protocol you mentioned.
Reed?
Tony leaned in, metallic eyes flashing red.
Not now.
Sue's eyes narrowed. Reed had never kept secrets from her before.
Honey, can you take care of that paperwork Tony mentioned?
It's all online.
He looked like a creature from a 50s sci-fi movie, an alien overlord come to rule benevolently over Earth. The Iron Man armor covered every inch of his body, leaving no visible trace of his humanity.
Sure. Oh, and Reed?
Yes, dear?
Your brother-in-law's doing better. The surgeon managed to get the bone fragments off his brain. They might even release him in a day or two.
That's...
Just in case you give a damn!
Then she turned and stalked away, out of the room, feeling the cold red laser eyes of Iron Man on her back with every step. Tony Stark's limo held every type of soft drink known to man. The drink sat above a trough of crushed ice, staring out at Tony like a row of glass and metal eyes. And not one of them was what he wanted. He needed to distract himself.
He's got word about a press conference that Tony Stark has called for tomorrow. This, of course, to follow the enactment of the Superhuman Registration Act into law just minutes from now. How does that strike you?
How does it strike me? It's great, Megan. I mean, it's only a first step toward controlling our massive superhuman problem. But at midnight tonight, everything my newspaper has ever campaigned for officially becomes law.
Do you think that...
No more masks, no more hiding, and no more creepy excuses about secret identities. These clowns will work for S.H.I.E.L.D., or their colorful butts will wind up in jail, period.
Mr. Jameson, do you really think all the superheroes are just going to sign up?
Hell no. Only the smart ones.
Whoa, he's even creepier when he smiles.
Still, it was good to have a major newspaper on this side of registration, even one run by a borderline psychopath. On the muted TV, the corner of the screen read, 11:53 p.m.
Pull over, Happy. Time to drink a toast.
You got a beer for me back there, Mr. Stark?
You're driving, Hap. Let's play by the rules tonight.
Heard anything from Captain America, Mr. Stark?
Tony fidgeted, shifted the smartphone from hand to hand. He looked up at Happy, who sat opposite, hefting a seltzer water while leaning his bulky frame against the driver's barrier. He looked so at ease. Would Tony ever feel that way again?
No, nothing from Cap. Hawkeye's dropped out of sight, too, and I can't raise Cage. I think Cap's secretly putting together his own team. Happy, I can't look.
He tossed the phone to Happy.
Tell me, how many heroes have registered?
Looks like 37. Wait, make that 38. Miss Widow's registration just came through.
Huh. Just like Natasha to make me sweat a little. 38.
That's about what you expected, right?
Yeah, pretty much. Still. Hap, what about the FF? Are they all registered?
Just a sec. Yep, they're all here. All four of them.
Well, that was something at least.
Couple more just rolled in. Probably not everybody's gonna meet the deadline head on. Hey, it's 1 minute till. You want we should do a New Year's style countdown?
No.
Tony leaned back, closing his eyes tight. He kept them closed, squeezing till spots appeared.
I just hope we're doing the right...
Holy...
Tony snapped his eyes open just in time to see Happy toss the smartphone up in the air like a boiling pan of oil.
Shield alert.
Guess you'll be needing this.
Happy was already holding up the Iron Man helmet. Shield Mobile Command Center 3A was a high-tech hovercraft designed specifically for urban operations. Tony caught up with it a few blocks north of Wall Street, among the close-packed skyscrapers of Lower Manhattan. At first, all he saw was a blur, like a heat wave rippling sideways in the night against the fifth-story windows. When he matched the vehicle's speed, his sensors penetrated the shield stealth cloak. And he saw the command center, a low flat bus with a pointed front end, skimming its way around the tall buildings.
Iron Man, real name Tony Stark. Request approval to come aboard.
The interior was dark, cramped, and crowded with surveillance screens. A real war room. Four SHIELD agents in full gear manned computer consoles.
Unregistered minor.
Maria Hill pointed to a flat screen.
Tried to foil a robbery in costume. A clear violation of the act.
Tony lifted up his faceplate and peered at the screen. It showed a young masked black man, accompanied by one of Tony's own dossier entries. Subject, Eli Bradley. Alias, Patriot. Group affiliation, Young Avengers, unauthorized. Powers, enhanced strength, agility, throwing stars. Power type, inborn artificial hybrid. Current location, New York, New York.
Where is he now?
Russell, the new holo display online yet?
Yes, ma'am.
Punch it up.
She motioned Tony back. In the center of the room, a three-dimensional image flickered to life. Patriot, scared and breathing hard, lit only by sporadic street lamps and roof lights. He jumped for his life, making incredible leaps from the top of one high building to another.
This display is state-of-the-art. It uses ordinary cameras, but enhances the...
I know. I designed it.
We've got him. NYPD surveillance cameras are locked on his heat signature. Foxtrot 4 is closing in just a few blocks south of here.
On the image, a helicopter spotlight appeared in the air, just behind Patriot.
Oh, crap!
He half turned, a terrified look on his face. Then he sprinted away even faster.
Run, you little freak.
Tony frowned. He'd never been sure what to make of Hill. She struck him as an extremist, the kind of soldier who always looked for the simplest, most violent solution to a problem. The loss of Nick Fury had left a vacuum at the top of SHIELD, a dangerous thing in an organization charged with policing the entire free world. Hill had seen her chance and grabbed for it. And she sure seemed to be taking a lot of pleasure in this.
The Registration Act has only been law for 38 minutes, Commander. Shouldn't you give this kid a little time?
First off, Stark, it's director now.
Acting director.
Patriot and the Young Avengers, a group I might add that you allowed tacitly to be formed in the first place, have been tweeting all night against the act.
She motioned to an agent, who called up a flat screen full of text.
Examples. Death before unmasking. F SHIELD forever. Tony Stark, one percenter with a heart of stone. Bit of poetry in that one, I thought.
Director, Signal from Foxtrot 4.
On the hollow, Patriot made a massive leap up and across a dark gap between buildings. He scrambled and almost missed the roof, but grabbed hold and vaulted up. The copter circled around to intercept him, fanning its light across the roof. Tony could make out weapon launchers mounted on both sides of it, just above its landing gear.
Visual confirmation, Shield Tac. I'm in position.
Roger that, Foxtrot 4. Permission to use tranquilizers and minimum force. Satisfied, Stark?
Tony didn't answer. A hail of capsules and rubber bullets rained down on Patriot's running figure, ripping open the back of his jacket. But he kept moving.
No injury, Shield Tac.
This kid is bulletproof now?
Damn database, I thought we had people updating this thing.
Patience, people. As Mr. Stark says, we've been in this business for less than an hour.
Where's he going? He's running out of island.
According to our intel, the young Avengers have a safe house right about...
Still pursued by the helicopter, Patriot launched himself off the side of another building, but this time he wasn't aiming at a roof. He flailed in the air, then crashed straight into a plate glass window. He tumbled inside the building.
There.
Switching to copter view.
The image became a shaky downshot on Patriot, standing just inside the shattered window. The room looked dark, abandoned. Tony couldn't make out any other figures.
Guys! We gotta get out of here! I was breaking up a mugging, for God's sake! And there's seals all over me!
He's in for a surprise. We picked up the rest of the young Avengers half an hour ago.
Actually, Wiccan's still in the wind, but local police have got a line on him.
Guys, this is serious!
Patriot's figure wobbled as the copter circled around the gap in the building.
Shield is... they're not messing around!
Trank's an effective Shield Tac, and now I can't get a bead on him.
Is that building clear?
Yes, ma'am. No life signs.
Foxtrot 4, you are cleared to escalate.
What does that mean?
The agent clicked back to a wide view. Twin incendiary missiles flashed out from the copter's weapon launchers, headed straight toward the building. The framework shattered and the top three floors erupted into the air. Glass and metal flying everywhere. A cloud of dark ash filled the screen, blotting out the devastation.
What are you doing? Are you insane?
That kid is practically indestructible. What do you expect?
I expect you not to cause wanton property damage. The whole idea behind this is to not panic people.
I suppose our methods differ.
If that kid is dead...
He's not. Look, I can't get a picture. NYPD cameras were knocked out by the blast. But Foxtrot 4 confirms they picked him up.
This is wrong.
Tony snapped his visor down, and all his systems flashed to life.
I'm gonna speak to the president about this.
Stark! We're on the same side here.
I know.
Aunt May's house was very quiet. Old books, tchotchkes, souvenirs from vacations taken back when air travel was far less casual. Framed pictures everywhere. Peter, Uncle Ben, and Peter's long-dead parents posed proudly in their military uniforms. Sepia-toned photos from the early 20th century, maybe even the 19th. The smell of mothballs, of disinfectants manufactured decades ago. Peter Parker sat on his bed, smoothed down the old checkered bedspread. Like everything else in the room, it had been here for decades. His old clunky microscope, the analog film camera he'd taken his first photos with, the science trophy with a dent in it, where Flash Thompson had knocked it to the ground back in high school. All of it the same. Preserved, he realized, but not obsessively. Proudly, there was a difference. So much of him, of Peter Parker, was here in this room. And yet a big slice, a big thread in the skein of his life, was missing. He went to the closet and pulled back a loose board. He felt around for a moment and closed a hand around his very first cloth Spider-Man mask. It stared at him with oversized white eyes, slightly discolored with age.
Peter?
A surge of panic ran through him. He wadded up the mask, stuffed it into his back pocket.
In here, Aunt May.
Every time Peter came to visit, Aunt May made him wheat cakes, no matter what time of day or night. Fortunately, he was hungry.
Oh, goodness, Peter, you're awake early. The sun isn't even up yet.
She stood in the doorway, wobbling a little, but smiling for her nephew. Her hair was pulled back in a neat bun. Her face showed a few more lines every year. Her hands were blue-veined but steady. Only one thing was odd. The tray in her hands held chocolate chip cookies, not wheat cakes.
I couldn't sleep.
Cookies, Aunt May?
Oh.
She looked at the tray, as if seeing it for the first time.
I don't know, dear. Today seemed different.
I'm not complaining.
He took one.
Mmm. Still hot.
The chips melted onto his tongue. A pleasant, homey feeling. May smiled and set down the tray. Peter studied her as he finished his cookie.
How do you feel, Aunt May?
Oh, I'm fine, Peter. I'm always fine. But I worry about you.
Me?
She perched on the bed, motioning him to sit next to her.
Your luck with girls is... Well, it's not stellar, dear. I'm sorry to have to say it.
Aunt May...
I still think it's a shame about Anna Watson's niece. That's all I'm saying.
Stop changing the subject, pretty girl. Are you taking your pills?
Who's changing the subject now?
She reached out and touched his knee.
Really, Peter? There's nothing wrong.
Yes, there is, Aunt May. There's plenty wrong. Oh, no, not here. Not with you. It's just... There's a lot of stuff going on out in the world.
The Stamford business.
Yeah. People are really afraid right now.
That is bad.
She stood up, and a faraway look came into her eyes.
I was a little girl when Joseph McCarthy launched his big campaign against communism. He managed to scare people into thinking they were communists everywhere. In the Congress, in their backyards, waiting in the bushes to overthrow the government.
Were there?
Oh, maybe a few, but most of them were too busy smoking marijuana to overthrow anything.
This is a little different, Aunt May. Nowadays, people are afraid of superhumans, and there really are a lot of them running around. Flying, too.
My point is, Peter, people make very bad decisions when they're afraid.
Yeah.
You're fidgeting, dear. What is it?
It's, I have to tell you something, Aunt May, and it's kind of, well, tricky.
Peter, listen to me.
She put a hand under his chin, forced him to look into her eyes.
Whatever's going on out in the world, that's out there. It doesn't touch us. It doesn't come inside these walls. It's just you and me here, and you can tell me anything.
Okay, but this might be a shock.
So it's true.
What?
It's all right, Peter. I half saw this coming. Mrs. Cardaman's boy just came out, and he's so much happier now. He's even talking about marrying his partner, I guess you call it. Come to think of it, he used to date fashion models, too.
What? Aunt May, I'm not... Wait, Jason Cardaman's gay? Oh, of course he is. But no,
You have to understand, Peter. My generation didn't grow up with... We just didn't talk about such things. But times have changed, and you have to be your own unique, wonderful self.
Aunt May, I'm not gay.
Oh!
For a moment, she looked confused. Her eyes darted around the room, coming to rest back on Peter. This was it. This was the moment. Slowly, she reached behind him. A small scrap of red fabric protruded from his back pocket. She tugged at it tentatively until a web pattern appeared. Then, she yanked it free. They stood together for a long moment, both staring at the blank-eyed mask of Spider-Man.
Oh, Peter! I've known about this for years.
Aunt May.
You're not so sneaky as you think, young man.
Oh, Aunt May.
But why today, Peter? Why now?
Because...
He reached out with both arms and pulled her close. He buried his head on her shoulder, like when he was a little boy.
Because something's going to happen. Something that will come inside these walls. But it's okay. You'll be safe. I've made sure of that. No matter what, you'll be safe.
Oh, Peter, dear Peter, I trust you. And whatever happens, I am so, so proud of you.
He hugged her tight, rocked her slowly side to side. Tears flowed down his cheeks. For one moment, he felt utter peace. Then the panic returned. Along with the thought, this was the easy part.
Mobile bus one, we got him. The witch kid's down.
At the sound of Director Hill's voice, the driver's hands tightened on the steering wheel.
Location?
Brooklyn Bridge.
The badge on the driver's shield uniform read Agent Lamont. He glanced over at the burly agent in the passenger seat. Axton, that was his name. Axton sat tense in his full armor, smiling, a stun truncheon in his hand.
That's the last one. Hang on.
Shield Mobile Bus 1, an 8-ton urban paddy wagon with adamantium-reinforced holding walls, lit up in a blare of lights. It swung around in a U-turn through the crowded intersection, then took off at full speed, heading south down West Street.
Shield TAC, this is Bus 1, moving in for pickup.
Roger, Bus 1. It's a mess down there, but we'll have the locals clear you a path.
All right, this is what I'm talking about.
Axton leaned forward and called up a dossier photo of the Young Avengers on the dashboard computer screen.
Patriot, Hulkling, Stature, Speed. Speed. That's a hero name? These kids, they're what, 16 years old, 17 tops, and they're out there in their pantyhose laughing in our faces. Time somebody taught them a lesson.
A green sign appeared, big white arrow labeled, to Brooklyn Bridge. The driver pulled hard left, steering the bus onto Chambers Street. Up ahead, he could see flashing lights.
I mean, it's not like we're banning them, man. Nobody's stopping these punks from doing their thing. Government's even paying these clowns to go official now. But you know something? They don't want that. They don't get a buzz off of being legit. Freaks get off on the masks and all that mystery man crap.
To the right, a phalanx of lit-up cop cars blocked the ramp leading to the Brooklyn Bridge. The driver slowed down, moving in. A gray-haired police captain signaled to his men, and the cars broke ranks, opening a lane.
Gonna be one cold shower when they see the new pen they're building for these super creeps. Frank at Supply says it messes with your head, makes it so you can't even think about escaping.
The bus lurched over a pothole, bumping between the line of police up onto the bridge. The two lanes heading into Brooklyn had been cleared. Up ahead, a small figure lay in the middle of the road, surrounded by another pair of police cars. Wiccan, last of the Young Avengers.
Tranked. Hope it hurt the little creep. My sister used to date a superhero, you know? Turbo, he called himself. Thought he was pretty hot stuff.
The bus approached Wiccan, an unconscious teenage boy in gray with a tattered red cape around his neck. Cops stood in a semicircle around his body, their guns drawn and pointed.
No real powers, though. Turbo, I mean. I always wanted to get him alone when he took off that power suit. That would have given him the swirly of his life. Hey, shouldn't you slow down a little?
You know something, Axton?
The driver pulled the wheel around again, and Axton slammed against the far door. The passenger side door clicked open.
You talk too much.
And the driver kicked out sideways.
Falk, extraction, now!
Shield tag! Mobile Bus 1 has been compromised!
Should have hit him harder.
In the rearview mirror, Captain America saw a blur of red and white flash down out of the night sky. 9-foot wings spread wide, scattering the cops. By the time the locals squeezed off a few quick shots, Falcon was already airborne again, carrying the unconscious Wiccan in his arms.
I got him.
Cap frowned, jabbed at the shield radio. It changed frequencies, locking him out of the conversation. The road ahead was clear of traffic. The cops had blocked it off from both ends.
Valk, where are you?
About 15 feet above your head.
Cap glanced in the rearview mirror. The cops were aiming their guns upward, trying to get a bead on the soaring, dodging Falcon. Then another flash of lights caught Cap's attention. Up ahead, on the Brooklyn side of the bridge, two more NYPD cars loomed into view, bearing down on him fast.
Stay with me, Falcon.
Cap floored the accelerator, sending the bus shooting straight toward the two newcomers. Too late, the cop swerved, tried to get out of the way. Mobile Bus 1 struck the first police car straight on, shattering its headlights. The cops flew out of each door, landing roughly on the pavement. They watched horrified as the bus's huge wheels ground slowly up over the car's hood, smashing its windshield, crushing its engine clear down to the pavement. The bus bumped, lurched, and squashed the cop car flat. The driver of the other car leaned out the window, aiming his pistol.
No sleep till Brooklyn.
Is that a poem?
Then Cap saw them, up ahead. Shield aircrafts dropping down out of the sky to intercept. He glanced in the mirror again. The NYPD cops, the ones who'd captured Wiccan, were on the move again, closing in fast.
A new security state. It's efficient, that's for sure.
Cap, you got locals behind you and Shield up ahead. I don't know about you, but I only see two ends to this bridge.
Cap thumbed the bus's computer screen to life. He scrolled quickly through a series of dossier entries, then jabbed down on the one for Wiccan. The intel on William Kaplan's powers told Cap what he needed to know. Up ahead, the SHIELD troops were setting down, right in the middle of the road. Three copters, another bus, and yes, that was Mobile Command Center 3A itself, hovering just above the first exit in Brooklyn.
Surrender, Captain. You've got nowhere to run.
They weren't even moving to intercept. There was no hurry. They knew they had him.
Valk, is that kid conscious?
Unfortunately. He just woke up and started screaming.
Change of plans. Rendezvous with me. Now.
With you?
Cap glanced over at the passenger side of the cab.
Doors open.
Ground troops stood blocking the exit now, aiming their weapons. They formed a full line, with the copters hovering right above. Rifles glinted from the copter doorways. Cap's eyes flashed forward, then to the right, forward again, then back to the right. And this time he saw the white flash of the Falcon's wings. The burly man shifted the struggling Wiccan to his right arm and reached out to grab the door handle.
Hold her steady, will you?
Then, they were inside the cabin, Wiccan still flailing around. Falcon reached over to the door.
Son!
Wiccan looked up at Cap. Falcon folded his wings expertly behind his back. Then he pointed at the road ahead.
That is one metric truckload of SHIELD agents.
Son, we need an extraction. Do you know what that means?
Wiccan just stared at him with terrified eyes.
Your teammates are in the back of this vehicle. All of them. Patriot, Hulkling, Stature, and Speed. I can't get them or us out of this alone. I need your help.
Cap pulled up a map of Manhattan on the cabin's video screen. He jabbed a finger in one particular spot, and a red circle appeared next to the word Chelsea. They were drawing closer to the SHIELD line. A dozen high-powered particle rifles flashed red laser dots, zeroing straight in on the bus. Cap pointed to the map.
We need a teleportation spell, and we need it now.
Understand?
Yes, sir.
SHIELD copters.
It's gotta be now, son.
It'll be somewhere else. It'll be somewhere else.
A hairline crack appeared in the windshield.
Captain?
A bright blue glow seemed to rise within the cabin. Cap glanced right and saw the kid, Wiccan, glowing with energy.
Surrender! You have nowhere to go.
The bridge, the road, the SHIELD agents ahead all seemed to glow, to flare bright with that same blue radiance. Then the light seemed to thin out into a dozen strands, all radiating outward from the central core. The dozen became 100, 1,000, and then 1,000,000 beams of light, each pointed outward toward a different point in space. Probabilities. And then they were falling, tumbling outward away from the light core, toward one of the strands. One single destination out of millions.
Somewhere else.
The bus jolted, touched ground, the sudden acceleration slamming Cap back into his seat. He looked around in alarm. The truck barreled across a large indoor space, half the size of a football field, toward a brick wall, at 62 miles per hour.
Frying pan, fire!
Cap slammed on the brakes, jerking the wheel sideways. The tires began to smoke. The bus arced hard around, almost getting to a stop before the wall. Almost, but not quite. Its rear end whipped around, crunching sideways against the brick wall. The bus strained hard and almost tipped over. Then, righted itself again.
I want to be somewhere else.
Wiccan was still staring.
You did it, kid! We're here!
Cap wrenched open the door and dropped quickly to the concrete. The back door of the bus was dented, but its locking mechanism still held. Cap reached up with a handheld SHIELD device and clicked it open.
Come on out.
Hesitantly, the four young Avengers stumbled down the ramp. Stature, the young blonde size changer, came first, followed by Patriot, Hulkling, and Speed. They all wore thick collars, glowing with power-inhibiting technology. Their wrists were cuffed behind their backs. With the same device, Cap opened their cuffs. Falcon led Wiccan around to meet his friends. Wiccan's eyes met Hulkling's, and they both smiled.
Hey, miss me?
Stature's red and black costume was bloody from a cut on her cheek.
What's happening? Where are we?
Congratulations, kids. You've just joined the Resistance.
Cap gestured to the far doorway. A motley group marched toward them. Daredevil, grim in his all-red uniform, Goliath, 11 feet tall at present, Hawkeye the Marksman, bow slung over his shoulder, Tigra the Werewoman, and Luke Cage. Falcon strode up to Cage and clapped him on the shoulder.
Cage, my brother, finally came to your senses.
All good.
Stature approached Goliath.
Dr. Foster, you're part of this?
He smiled and held out his arms.
Grow a little bigger so I can hug you.
What is this place?
SHIELD Safe House number 23. Dates back to the Cold War. Existence known only to SHIELD officials of clearance level 34.
How many of them are there?
Now that Nick Fury is gone, zero.
He told me about it a long time ago.
Cap felt the adrenaline fading. A wave of sadness, of loss, washed over him. Suddenly he missed Fury. And Thor, too. Thor would have polished off those S.H.I.E.L.D. agents back on the bridge with one swing of his hammer, then laughed about it. There wasn't time for this. There was a war on.
Welcome aboard, man.
Wow.
Glad to have you.
The Resistance members were welcoming the newcomers.
Cap?
Wiccan stood before him, frowning, holding Hulkling's hand. Hulkling, a big green young man, was staring with worried eyes at Wiccan. Cap realized for the first time that they were a couple.
Son, you did good work out there. You saved all our hides.
Thanks. What's the plan here? What do you intend to do, hiding out in this base?
All eyes turned in Cap's direction.
We intend to help people, just as we've always done. To do what's right.
But how can we do that? We're all outlaws now. Wanted criminals.
It's not going to be easy. Tony Stark holds all the cards. The law is on his side, S.H.I.E.L.D. is in his pocket, and he's got more money and technology at his disposal than most sovereign nations. Stark Enterprises has been raking in Homeland Security money for the past decade. Heaven knows what new weapons they've got waiting in their labs. So we've got to be smart. We've got to be sneaky. We've got to use every resource at our disposal. If we are to prevail, if we're going to live as heroes, free to operate in the public's best interest, then we're going to have to win our freedom. We're going to have to build the nation we want to live in, one brick at a time.
Yeah!
Cap turned away, fighting back his emotion. Later, he would think of this as the moment the Resistance was truly born.